I'm Dr. Riedler, specializing in eyelid lifts at La Jolla Cosmetic Surgery Center. Restoring your confidence is my commitment. With the wealth of experience behind every procedure, I'm committed to unveiling the brightest version of you. Trust in a transformation that brings out a refreshed, youthful gaze that's not just seen, but felt.
Reach out to La Jolla Cosmetic Surgery Center to schedule your complimentary eyelid lift consultation with Dr. Riedler at 858-452-1981 or go to LaJollaCosmetic.com/IMD.
Urgent announcement, America. It's time to rise up and reclaim our values. Welcome to Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. This is your platform for truth and action. Join Steve and our guests as we confront the critical issues facing our nation today. We stand together for a pro-American, pro-family future rooted in our foundational truths. From defending our liberties to preserving our cultural heritage, we're here to ignite insightful discussions and passionate advocacy. Don't miss a moment of this crucial dialogue as we work to reclaim our cultural integrity and shape a brighter tomorrow. Tune in and be a part of the movement. It's your journey to informed citizenship and action. And now, let's dive in and make a difference together. Here's your host, Steve Austin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. And we're about a month from the election and about a month away to inauguration in Washington
right in
coming up. Yeah. And what an exciting time, January 20th. I had the opportunity with a potential client to go to the inauguration. So I was talking to this gentleman, and I said, well, yeah, but you have to get invited. And he says, yeah, you got to get invited. And I said, how much is it? He says, well, it's costing him $500,000. I said, $500,000 to attend. He's going to be there for a few days. Oh, I'm sure he's in a very nice hotel and whatnot. But I never really got a breakdown. But he said if I was his guest, it only cost $250,000.
I said, you should go tomorrow. That right here.
January's a really busy month for CPAs. Maybe I'll skip. But, oh, goodness. just going busy. Going to the Republican convention this summer was 10-15. That's stretching my personal budget quite a bit, but it was worth it. Yeah. But, we're going to be focusing on 2025. What's kind of interesting before we bring our guest on here in a few minutes is some of the positive changes that are already coming about. The current administration, for the most part, has pretty much shut down from everything I can tell. And that's probably some of the best news we've heard. But we're starting to see, after the 20th, the cabinet will get sworn in, and by and large, I think they've done a very good job of selecting professionals who, I think carry the right moral compass and carry the right ideologies. But it's interesting, in my business, the regulatory side of financial reporting has been pretty steep. Primarily, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, has been run by Democrats, and to a large extent, they have fully embraced climate change and all the regulations related to that, which I have to tell you is, if it wasn't serious, it's comical to listen to the folks, including the partners at the big four firms. They just drink the Kool-Aid without thinking about how silly a lot of this is, and it has to do with carbon measurements and most importantly, being able to attest to underwrite support a certain numbers related to the climate and carbon and recently listening to one of the big four webinars, they went through all the hoo-ha and the Paris Accord, and then the last question from the interviewer was, well, what happens if Trump gets elected? And they kind of looked at each other, and they said, well, I think climate change is in for a pretty bleak time. And, you know, we're starting to, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, issues related to the authenticity of climate change. But it's really built around left-wing green policies. We can look at, you know, we can look at the EV market falling apart. If you go to Sweden and see the Northvolt bankruptcy, if you go to Detroit, you see that the EV vehicle demand is way down. And if you go to the rental cars, Kelly, Hertz wrote off millions of dollars because nobody wants to rent them. And, you know, that side of the equation is certainly falling apart. So, and one of the interesting things is the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, which if you're a public company, you have to abide by the securities laws, but has been very woke and very left-wing. Well, the guy's name is Jesner. And he's gone. He's gone, and they're replacing him with a common sense individual who even has enough common sense that he may eliminate the PCAOB. Now, I live in a world where the PCAOB means something. It stands for Public Company Oversight Accountability Board. And it went into effect and probably was needed after the Enron debacle. And which basically put Anderson out of business, Arthur Anderson, and of course the failure of Enron and a lot of other companies. But the PCAOB became the watchdog over the accounting profession, and I would say for the first 10 years or so, they played an important role of kind of getting the accounting boards, the audit committees in line, and to have some weight in terms of authority at on the boards of public companies and the reporting. But then it got to a point where it has constantly been complaining about the audits and the restatements and whatnot, to the point that they're actually talking about possibly not only reducing it but possibly eliminating it, because you have no recourse. The accounting firms have very, very little recourse when they are inspected and the reports come out, and you know, there's very little appeal in the process, and they can destroy careers, you know, and people lose their licenses. And I'm an advocate for obviously doing the work right, but the heavy government regulations, Kelly, that we see, that's in just one slice. But Department of Education is another area that I think we'll see big changes. And, of course, we have the Vivek Elon tag team that is going to, I think, make a big difference in Washington. You know what percent of the federal employees in Washington actually show up in their office?
I think it's 6%. It's really low.
Well, it's 6% if you include the cleaning crew. It's 1% of actual employees.
Unbelievable.
Now, I don't know why, if you only have 1% of the people showing up, why do you need five times that many to clean the restrooms?
Right. Absolutely.
Now, I think a little bit of, you know, this is 1% of the people show up for 40 hours.
Yeah.
I think the pattern has probably been that they do come in on maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And and that's probably why you have to have the larger maintenance crews. But for the most part, a lot of those buildings are vacant or highly underutilized.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Department of Efficiency, DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, is going to be able to achieve. And, you know, they have the right people in there, and they certainly have the tone at the top. But think about if we could even reduce the bureaucracy by 10 to 15%, Kelly, that would save trillions of dollars in tax dollars.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I mean, it's just ludicrous how many bureaucracies we have now. And you really hit on something there with Vivek and Elon and having now this DOGE where they can oversee. I think they're going to do everything you just said, is take a look at, hey, maybe the PCAOB was necessary right off the bat, like you said. But now, you know, just to stay relevant, they're imposing so much more. And this happens a lot. That's why they're called the progressives, right? It just continues to progress. But I would say with the Board of Education, PCA, so many other bureaucracies, I hope they take a really deep look and a deep dive and say, is this really necessary? Or are we just putting more stipulations on companies, nonprofits, you know, even a lot of these counties and city boards? Are we putting too many stipulations that they're not able to do their job? They're not able to grow. And really, in the long run, we're hurting the people. And that's kind of what's been happening with a lot of these bureaucracies. So I get excited about it as well. And I know those two are going to team up and, you know, they're not going to care. They're going to go in and, you know, take a, what did Elon come in with the kitchen sink? He got rid of everything but the kitchen sink. So,
well, he certainly went into Twitter and I think he cut out 90% of the people. And,
right. And that's needed again in our government.
Yeah. I mean, it's, now, if you take it to the next step, let's say they do eliminate a number of jobs. What is going to happen to those folks? And I think the answer is that they need to find a more efficient use. You know, the most the rarest of resources is human labor. So the question is the human labor being matched up in the most efficient way to produce things? So one of the things that will happen is that while there may be some unemployment periods and whatnot, that we're going to find people's talents are going to have to be adjusted to basically, you know, re-educate, find new work, and find more effective ways of using people's labor. Mm-hmm. So, but for the most part, the, you know, the $36 trillion of debt we have, you know, we're able to, in this country, print money. And, you know, if Kelly, if you and I started printing money and take it to the grocery store, we'd end up in handcuffs pretty quickly. You got to let the ink dry, you know. But you know, the reality is that you know, only the federal government can actually increase the national debt. And a lot of it is through printing money and borrowing. And, you know, we're at a point now that we are at over 150% of our GDP, which is a very dangerous position to be in as a country. And I'm hopeful that we can get to balanced budgets and actually see the, you know, if somebody put a 5 or 10 year plan together of eliminating half of the national debt, let's say, to get it under $20 trillion, would be just a phenomenal thing. Our, you know, we, our interest payments would drop. Our, you know, it would be non-inflationary. We would have more capital in the pockets of the citizens to either purchase goods or invest in new enterprises. I mean, you know, the United States is still such a fascinating place to live. You know, we're only 4% of the population of the earth. The rest of the earth is 96% of the population, and yet we produce 10 times the our relative population. And, you know, it's even with all its warts and everything, the United States is truly an American dream. And a lot of it gets back to being a constitutional republic, not a democracy. Constitutional republic that respects innovation. And respects the freedom for people to do. I mean, it as we look around California in particular, the you know, I spent most of my career on the East Coast. You come out to California, it's one big incubator of people with all kinds of cool ideas, and some of them succeed, a lot of them fail. But by the same token, you know, California is truly a highly innovative environment. San Diego, where we live, is, you know, has so many creative ventures that are getting funded and people that really have some very cool ideas. You know, the cell phone that you're using today really came out of San Diego. The smartphone came out of Qualcomm and CDMA technology that, you know, that Irwin Jacobs, when he thought through that, and some of his friends, I think, at UCSD, they built something that, I can oftentimes run my firm, you can run your business from this thing called a cell phone that you carry around.
Your little computer. Yeah.
I mean, it's, and you can multitask with it. You can be talking to somebody, you can be looking at emails, you can be sending texts. And it's, it's truly
multiple
an amazing.
Screens. You're on apps, you're on multiple screens on the internet. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, even just listening to you talk right now, Steve, and my husband and I, we debate each of these issues all the time about just what the government should do, what it should look like, how it should be comprised, you know, what would really help America grow and flourish. And it's so intricate. And I love talking about each and every way. But this is why I'm so excited about the cabinet that he's putting together, that Trump is putting together, because these are people way smarter than me. And dare I say, maybe smarter than you, Steve. I'm not sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Depends on the area, right? He should definitely be calling you in for CPA tax advice. But we see all of these incredible people who are good. They understand the industry. They understand the area of expertise that they've been called to. And then on top of that, you know, they have a lot of our Christian conservative values and our small government values. And so I think we're going to see just incredible change in the first 2 years. I've heard people, you know, give expectations about what the first 2 years are going to look like, maybe even cut our debt in half. But I just see a lot of promise and I'm pretty excited. Well, so I definitely want to dive into each of those.
And hopefully we not only have 4 years, but we have a 12-year runway with, you know, the 12 years would just be phenomenal in terms of if people really, you know, one of the things we're doing at the PAC this next year is exposing the Marxism in the universities. We still have some big, big challenges in this country because – yeah, one of the things that the left wing has done very successfully is infiltrated almost all our state universities and Ivy League schools, such that they have they've worshipped socialism and Marxism, you know, an ism that, you know, Karl Marx couldn't even feed his family, but oh, he's the guy we ought to be following, and the problems that we have, but nevertheless, we have a lot of one of the challenges we do have in California, in particular, is homelessness. And we're going to be talking with a guest in a few minutes that is, and while San Diego isn't the worst, it certainly has. In fact, as I was driving to the office today, it's just sad to see people on the freeways, on the off ramps. First of all, I don't quite understand in this weather how they survive. More importantly, that, you know, their life is not productive in any sense. And we're going to be talking today with the head of a very effective group in East County, San Diego, that's won a lot of praise from folks, in part because they have not taken any government funding. We're going to explore.
So they have the freedom to do it the right way, and they don't have all the regulations, and it's so needed. And you said something there, Steve. You said we don't have probably the highest population of homelessness here in San Diego. However, you know, you made that comment about the weather. We happen to have the best weather, you know, for homeless people to be in. So I would beg the question, if we have had the largest influction of homelessness in comparison to other cities, I don't know if it's because of the lax in some of our policies, because if you look at that, you know, you always talk about that 2020, 2024 California map where you can see who's red and blue. we're pretty blue down here in San Diego, and maybe even getting bluer while the rest of the state is getting red, unfortunately. I don't know if that's border state, but we can get into that later. But I do worry, and I wonder if it's had the biggest influx of homelessness in comparison to a lot of these other big cities.
Well, you know, yesterday the city council or the county supervisors voted 3-1 to be Thank extra you. Difficult with the with ICE and the federal government in getting rid of the criminals and
Jim
immigrants.
Desmond, he stood up.
Yeah, he did. Joel Anderson, who will be on our show one of these days, was absent. But either way, it would have been it would have been a 3-2 or 3-1 vote with respect to that issue. But you know, it just shows you how blue and challenging San Diego is, and that's really going to take a lot of education and a lot of convincing to get people to understand that that's not the way to operate. So we have a special guest today, Kelly, Dr. Julie Hayden, who is the CEO of the East County Transitional Living Center. And Julie, are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I know you've been very busy and I think just stepped out of a board meeting or something. So we appreciate you you coming on. In full disclosure, ECTLC is an audit and tax client of Swenson Advisors, and we're delighted to have the opportunity to serve them. Julie has been the CEO now for, what, a year and a half?
About a year and a half, yes.
Yeah, and she has done a great job. In fact, Julie, we're sitting at I'm sitting in the studio in La Jolla, where you also have a, I think, Saturday program, is that right, on Salem?
Yeah. Yep, Light in the World, and it's Saturdays at 1 p.m.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we've expanded a little bit. We have our K-Praise program that you will be on, which is on Sundays, right, I call it after church drive time, mm-hmm. between 12 and 1, you know, and you'll be on then. But we've also expanded to the weekdays with KCBQ we're right before Larry Elder and after Dennis Prager. We're continuing to work. Kelly Hansen, who I don't think you've never met, but she's been the co-host, and she is in Fallbrook online here with us, and she's married to a fireman and has four men at home, four boys. Uh-huh. So she is doing a great job here, and she does a lot of radio shows and things. So, well, first of all, Julie, thanks for coming on.
And, thank you.
And let's step back and talk a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I am a psychologist by trade, and so kind of going back to the very beginning, you know, I really started my education in biblical studies because I didn't really know what I was going to do as a career. And as I moved forward, I ended up in counseling and psychology. And so that seemed to bring all my strengths together. And I kind of pursued clinically working with lots of different populations. They all seem to be, you know, extreme domestic violence, chronic mental illness, addiction. And on the path God had for us, my husband and I started companies and eventually university, drug treatment programs, all the way up to today, just the honor of being a part of East County Transitional Living Center, where, you know, we have a huge facility really helping people in kind of their worst situations get back on their feet and have their life transformed. So it's been a journey, you know, so I can go back in and talk about any of that history, but it's definitely been a fun road and glad to be where I'm at today.
Well, I have to share with you that the way I got to know ECTLC is through, we have a children's foundation at Swenson. It's called Swenson's Children's Foundation. And my youngest daughter is the executive director And we worked together to get it started, to get the 501c filings. Kelly, it was probably almost a decade ago now. And we put a board together, and people like Mark Stevens are on the board, but also a gentleman by the name of Chuck Leslie. And I've known Chuck.
I recognize that.
For a long time, both when he was at Christian High, recruited him for the business development fellow at Santa Fe Christian. And then he went back. He was the headmaster at Christian High, and then left there and became the ambassador for the Rock Church. And ultimately today, I think he's the headmaster of Rock Academy. But on one of our board calls, Chuck said, you know, you should kind of get to know this organization in East County called East County Transitional Living Center. I thought, wow, now there's a name that just rolls right off the tongue. And he says, they're doing some great stuff out there. And if the Children's Foundation wants to put a program together, that'd be a great place to go out and talk. So my daughter, Sarah, traveled out there and met some of the folks, Julie, before you were there. And she talked him into doing some art classes for the kids. And in a moment, I'm going to ask you to really explain what all is at the center. And kind of got to know the folks there. And since then, she has put on probably, six or eight programs. And then we've tried to do some special things at Christmas for the kids. But that's how that name and that organization came to mind. But there's a lot more. Julie, kind of tell us the whole layout of this and what East County Transitional Living Center is trying to achieve.
Sure. So our main campus, it has about 340 beds altogether, and we have two large divisions, one's families and one's singles. And on the family side, there's 80 rooms, individual rooms for families. So we can have some families share if they're maybe a mom with a young child. Otherwise, we have at least 80 families on campus, 160 kids on campus, and about 100 singles going through the program. And that's our main location. We have four other locations, so altogether 540 beds. And there's two roads people are usually on. One is just emergency housing. That's 28 days. And the main purpose of that is kind of anyone that needs to just get back on their feet and figure out what they're going to do next. And then a one-year program that is faith-based. We incorporate Bible studies and the faith component. And we incorporate life skills, a lot of classes to just get the tools they need to be independent by the time they graduate. And we have work therapy. So they're hands-on learning a job while they're on campus in our one-year program to get hired. And we really want them to kind of be independent, self-sustaining by the time they're done. So as they go through that whole one-year program, we have various ways that they get resources built in to either get out of a hole they might have gotten themselves into or get ahead, you know, some kind of a GED, Grossmont College, you know, those types of things. So it's a layering. A year is really important to get all of the resources they really need to have a good chance to keep what they get by the time they graduate. They usually all get permanent housing when they graduate. So it's about how do they maintain that on their own once they leave us.
And see that we're listening today to Dr. Julie Hayden, the CEO of East County Transitional Living Center, ECTLC. And, you know, I've been involved. We audit a lot of nonprofit organizations. And I have to tell you, your numbers are off the charts. And I'm just amazed at your ability to transition people who are maybe homeless or have addictions or whatever within a relatively short period of time into productive citizens is just pretty amazing to me. So and now you are, what, 100% funded by the federal government? Is that true?
No, actually, very little comes from federal government. I don't know if anything from federal government. We do get about 10% from city emergency housing fund, CBDG grants, you know, a little bit from the county to help fix our property when we need it. Like we had a pool fence put in. So we do have less than 10% coming in through various county resources, city resources.
So Kelly,
otherwise, everything is private funded.
Yeah, Kelly, that is just so remarkable that this organization is highly successful and really doesn't tap the public and taxes and whatnot. Truly quite a success story. Now, I've been on campus a few times, and in part with some of the fundraising, in part in connection with our audits. And tell us what was the history of this property?
So, interesting enough, it was the Fabulous Seven Motel with Aunt Emma's Pancake House restaurant next door, and it was notated to be one of the highest crime locations, drug locations in San Diego.
Wow.
So it was, you know, a lot of drugs were dealt out of this facility before they took it over. And funny enough, over 20 years ago, it was my first counseling experience. When I was in my master's program, you have to do a volunteer internship. And I did that here. It was still a motel. It was a terrible condition motel, and Shadow Mountain had some offices on campus, and we did therapy through a local counseling center, Family Focused Christian Counseling in El Cajon. And so that was my first experience when it was a real motel, and it was in terrible condition.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing. And what I find interesting is how efficient, and I've been to you know, the Pancake House. We've had some dinners there. Bill Wells, the mayor, has had his music groups there, and I've seen the kids who you know, work on some of these art projects. But it's truly amazing how you've taken a property, and I wouldn't say you've turned it into something opulent, but you've turned it into something clean and functional, and a very efficient property, Kelly, that gets the job done. In fact, you know, as I, you know, didn't you folks recently get an award from the Taxpayers Association?
We did. The award was Open and Honest Communication, Open and Honest Certified by the San Diego Taxpayers Association. But in conversation with them, they shared that same sentiment. They said they did not know how we did what we do, that we were 10 times more efficient than any program they had seen the numbers on. So they're coming back wanting to audit 2024 to see if the same outcomes are there. And if they are, they said they want to tell the world that they want us to be known so people know there's a higher standard to be held to in where your money goes.
Well, Haney Hong and I are good friends who runs that association, and you know, and I'm familiar with other groups in town, but you folks are really in a class by yourself. And I said, Haney, you need to get to know Julie. You need to understand this place and the economics. And so I'm delighted that you got that. I was driving back from Sacramento on a Sunday probably a year ago, Kelly. I had the radio on. I like listening to the radio. And this pastor was on talking away. And then he said, yeah, there's this organization in San Diego called East County Transitional. So here I was in Northern California hearing about ECTLC.
Wow.
And I forget who the pastor was. But nevertheless, it's made quite an impact on the local churches. And then you have these work programs. Tell us about there's some pretty interesting work programs that you have for the participants that as they tell us about how that whole thing works.
Sure. Work therapy is a big piece of how people transform their lives as quickly as they do. Obviously, we're a faith-based program, so, you know, in the end, we're giving credit to God and what he does in people's lives. But when people start working and they have that sense of self-esteem and that they're capable, it really makes a difference on their motivation. So we use participants for the front desk, for housekeeping. We have off-site contracts. We have something called Clean and Safe with the city of El Cajon. So some of our guys, they pressure spray and clean the streets, the main street of El Cajon, where they used to be homeless. And now they're taking good care of the city and talking to other homeless individuals about how to come get help. So it's really a key piece of what we do. And honestly, about 60% of our income comes from offsite work programs like this. So we're teaching them a skill and teaching them safety and training them on how to do a job, construction, vegetation management, maybe clearing defensible space for the fire department. And some of that's our income. And then when they get to the end, we have relationships with organizations that hire our participants. So now at the last 3 months of their program, they get hired on and they're getting the income, preparing to get an apartment or permanent housing when they graduate.
See, I think, Kelly, that's just so remarkable to see in a relatively short period of time. And the whole thing of work therapy, I think there's a lot to that in that, you know, even as we go to work and come back after a busy day, you know, it's there's something rewarding about feeling accomplishment. I think it's something that God puts in our hearts by Fridays. And I'm still very busy, but Fridays, Gail and I have a standing date at Denny's, and we have the same table, the same waitress, and a lot of times we order the same stuff. But we're drinking Denny's coffee and talking about the week, and usually I'm, you know, pretty roasted, pretty tired, and she is too, but it is a good feeling to have accomplished. We always kind of look back at what were the challenges for the week and what we got done or didn't get done. And then usually talk about, are we going to go to a movie on Saturday, and church on Sunday. But there is a lot to, and you, you know, with your professional training, I'm sure can explain a lot better than I can about the benefits of work and the benefits of people feeling and seeing the reward monetarily for doing a job and completing a task.
Yeah, it is something I think in my personal faith and how I see faith, I think we're created for it, you know, that is where we find fulfillment. But statistically, psychologically, you'll see definitely for men, for example, they find their identity through their job. And so you can see how it negatively affects them, even to where somebody loses their job. Sometimes that actually affects their mental health. And we've seen that in today's society. So there's a lot of research that goes into how people find their identity through work. But it also builds a sense of self-efficacy, that they are capable of taking care of themselves. And if they believe that, they're more likely to actually go do it. So if we give them a bite-sized piece of that, they do a job and they do it well, and we praise them and we give them the next set of responsibility, just like you would you know, as a parent, giving people more responsibility as they're, you know, meeting teenage years and adult years, you're giving them more responsibility. They have that self-esteem. Well, not everybody was given that in their road as adults. So yes, they're 30, but maybe nobody poured into them the skill they needed to be successful and then letting them go for it, trusting them with that responsibility. You know, sometimes they're trusted with a chainsaw. You know, they're taught a skill and then they have to go do it. The sense of self-esteem and self-efficacy, the belief in themselves that they can do it, that goes a long way for success long term.
Absolutely. And Julie, I mean, this is Kelly, by the way. So again, very nice to meet you. And I can just feel your heart, you know, having been through biblical studies and then counseling, psychology, and you were doing drug programs. It sounds like you were kind of had a heart for this from the beginning. And I'm curious to know, you know, in the side of counseling and psychology, when you come to that point and you're talking to each individual, do you see a theme? Is there, you know, kind of speak to us a little bit about what is the main reason that a lot of people are find themselves homeless? Is it, you know, drug addiction? Are they ex-military PTSD? Are they dealing with domestic violence? What are some of the biggest issues that you're seeing are the root cause of creating homelessness?
That's a great question. And everything you're listing is definitely seen as big themes. So you can see addiction and mental health difficulties as huge reasons people stay homeless. You know, I think in our economy, we can recognize and statistically we see with the housing market and our economy, it's easy to be homeless. It's easy to lose your apartment, to not be able to pay rent. But those that stay in a homeless situation and are stuck and can't get out, they don't have a support system as a theme, or they have a mental illness or an addiction that kind of keeps them trapped for other reasons. And so they're not getting out of that situation. Now, if you took all of those reasons that we listed, because military PTSD, we see vets on the streets for sure. When you look at them and you go back to the core, all of those have trauma. So if you hear a person's story when they're homeless, you're going to probably find trauma 95% of the time. So we see the connection to early trauma as to why somebody is a higher risk for addiction, mental health, and homelessness. That's a big pattern. But just hear their story, and you're going to hear a story that makes sense of how they ended up there. And so if we address it from that perspective and we go back and help them heal that trauma, the trauma that also might interfere with them making good decisions or thinking they have self-worth. So why get healthy? Why, you know, try to get something more out of life? If I'm a piece of, you know, whatever, and I don't deserve it, I'm not worth anything. So trauma to me is a key component we can't forget. That was that story that, you know, got them on the path to where they're at today.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before, Julie, before you came on, we were talking a little bit just about, you know, San Diego may not have the most homeless people out of a lot of the big cities you see across the nation, but we have seen a really big influx of homelessness recently. And I'm wondering, can you speak to that? Is there a reason for that? You know, we were kind of speculating, but I bet you have a little more information.
Yeah, I would say if I had a quick answer, I think fentanyl is really a culprit, because addiction's always been there, but the potency level of fentanyl and how it works with addiction is something different than everything. For example, heroin, which is also an opiate, that also has a highly addictive proponent, and fentanyl is just 10 times greater. So I think that is a huge factor that we saw, you know, maybe 10 years ago, just how it was coming in and to coming up all the way to today where it's increasing, but it's easy and inexpensive and accessible. So sometimes that before that will be where people ended their addiction. You're so far off in your addiction that you finally get to heroin. Well, now it's easier to get, cheaper to get. So you jump all the way to the worst quicker. And maybe you're not even trying to. You're trying to use another drug, even like marijuana, and it's laced with fentanyl. So the addiction piece of homelessness right now really has been affected by that. It is something that grabs a person and has a level of addiction that's just hard to even explain. So then I would jump to COVID and its impact, as well as economy and housing prices. How somebody gets homeless is so easy. I had a lady 2 weeks into being here, I had a lady pull in that had a job at the school district, a great job, great benefits, living in her car with her kids. So we have a more extreme situation today than we have in the past. Even though it's always been there, it's gotten to another level.
Yeah, you can have some pretty razor-thin differences between having a home or being able to rent and being out on the street. It really is a sad situation. So, Julie, let's pivot a little bit. We have a new president We have, control of the House and the Senate. Not huge margins, but enough to hopefully turn the country in a more positive, righteous way. What impact do you think the new administration will have on ECTLC?
You know, I would say I'm still watching and listening to see how it'll come down to us. But something that I hope comes out of at least the language I'm hearing is the importance put on substance abuse treatment and mental health treatment, that mm-hmm. is recognized on how important that is right now. So ECTLC has not gone after too much in any kind of federal or county funding. But we are trying to open Genesis Recovery, a licensed drug treatment that would do detox and residential treatment for addiction and mental health stabilization. That's what we have not been able to address with ECTLC. So maybe about 30% of people trying to come for help, we have to turn away because we cannot take people with significant mental health or addiction problems. So that's one key area I'm hoping helps ECTLC. If we got that drug treatment first, and that should be money, you know, if everything goes as planned, that they're saying they're bringing the funds to us, they know that we need this. If that comes into San Diego and we can get more funds for housing, substance abuse, and mental health accessible, if we can use that and put that right there at the beginning phases of ECTLC, it'd be an intimate partnership, two separate entities. But we would want to get them into that stabilization first and then see if they want to do the one-year program with ECTLC. So that's a tangible way I'm hoping it comes in to help. Other than that, you know, we're looking at what grants, what's available that we could use that wouldn't jeopardize the core of what we stand for. Some things we are not able to get because we are overtly a faith-based program. And so that's unfortunate. I think that might hopefully change in the next 4 years, you know, in this administration. Can we have access to money because we are an efficient organization with outcomes, even though we have the faith component? I'm curious. I would love to see that happen.
Well, you know, Trump talks about the fact that instead of revenge, he's going to have success. And basically what he's saying is that we've been in a situation where there's been a lot of what I consider stupid policies, whether it's economics or immigration or whatever. And then evil, you know, anybody that we, you know, 70 million people voted for a woman who had no problem with taking the life of a baby a day before they're born. I mean, it's just hard to believe, but unlimited abortion is an evil thing. So stupid and evil is getting replaced, hopefully, by common sense and a Christian biblical worldview, so that, in a sense, the success of ECTLC and what you know, I think Haney and others are trying to do is to really showcase the model that you folks have. In fact, Kelly, I would encourage that the next time you have a little bit of time, which probably isn't much, but set up a time with Julie to come down and get the tour. And maybe, you know, maybe Leif, your husband, or one of the kids would like to go with you, because it's a fascinating situation. It is not opulent. Mm-hmm. It's very functional. It works well, and you'll see the heart of people. So,
absolutely. I'd love for my boys to come down and see that as well. And I just, you know, Julie, listening to all of this and knowing that, you know, you're not getting much funding from the government. And we look at billions of our tax dollars going into these homelessness programs that are not working. And you guys are doing it on your own outside of government funding. I just really hope and pray for you guys, and really hope that everybody listening, everybody that hears that story, knows the success of it, hears the common sense behind it, really gets behind you guys. So with the last, you know, part of our time, how can people either volunteer, get involved, like Steve said, I'd love to get my kids involved to come and see it. But also, how can people donate to the cause?
Sure. I definitely would encourage people to financially donate if they have that ability, because that is a great need we have. We have to raise it from our community or we don't exist. So our website is ECTLC. I think a Tender Love and Care, ECTLC.org, and you can donate or contact me. I'm on the website and come for tour and see if you want to donate. We have ways you can donate where you sponsor a family or sponsor a room or an individual, which is a great way to have it tangible where you know where it's going, where the money's going. And then we do use volunteers. So we have, for example, sometimes once a month, twice a month, we get about 40,000 pounds of fresh fruits and vegetables that we filter through, box up, and we offer it to the community. We use some of that at our location, but people drive in and they get a box, all from our community. We have a lot of people nearby that are not doing well financially, even though they're housed. So we want to increase our impact to those around us. So volunteers is a huge piece. We have high schoolers that join together, like youth groups come, they'll work on a project of painting or repairing. So just go to the website and either fill out the volunteer application or donate or meet me, email me, and we can touch base, and I'd love to get to know where they could be involved.
Well, Julie, we really appreciate you sharing. I know you're very busy, but sharing some insights, some encouragement, and really the values that you stand for in the organization and the board. And you know, I've gotten to know the organization fairly well between our professional relationship and my daughter and the Children's Foundation. So highly encourage folks to continue to help financially. These things don't, particularly when there's no government aid to speak of, nothing is inexpensive in San Diego these days, but very effective. And we just wish you well, and I wish you well with your radio program, and we'll continue to spread the word. So thank you very much again.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
So Kelly, another good program today, and so inspiring. And if you have a chance to go down Interstate 8, and it's not far from Shadow Mountain Church, and it's well worth it.
Awesome.
Well, Kelly, another good program. We'll kind of wrap things.
Right back at you.
We'll kind of wrap this up today, and we look forward to sharing more thoughts and more speakers and more guests here soon.
That concludes another powerful episode of Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. We thank you for joining us today as we tackled the crucial issues facing our beloved nation. Remember, we stand united for a pro-American, pro-family future deeply rooted in our foundational truths. The insightful discussions and passionate advocacy you've heard here today are just the beginning of our journey to reclaim our cultural integrity. Stay informed, stay engaged, and join us next week as we continue to shape a better tomorrow. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, let's keep standing strong for what matters most.
With the VSP Individual Vision Plan, you're the one pulling the strings. Because when getting vision coverage through work isn't an option, taking care of your eye health comes with a lot of decisions that only you should make. Like choosing how to save on the lens enhancements you need, the right name brand frames for your style, and choosing your eye doctor from the nation's largest independent doctor network. Even how you enroll is up to you. Make the best decisions for your vision at the eye doctor's office, retail locations, and online with VSP Individual Vision Plans.